Mom, Dad, I just have to say, it breaks my heart watching you stress over dinner every night. This year, I don't want you doing the fridge stare down. Hot take, with the new Blue Apron, eating healthy is easy. They've got pre-made and one-pan meals with plenty of balanced nutrition. No subscription needed. You could be plating like a chef instead of negotiating with leftovers. Make it your healthy, tasty, and easy 2026 dinner resolution. Just saying.
Get 50% off your first two orders plus free shipping with code LISTEN50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
One of the best food scenes in the country, right here in Minnesota. And nobody knows it like magazine food critic and James Beard Award finalist, Jason DeRusha. Now bringing you the most interesting people and hottest trends. Let's listen in as DeRusha eats.
She is perhaps the unlikely food star. Stephanie Hansen has been working in the food space, trying to become sort of famous. This is how the Star Tribune described her at a recent story celebrating Stephanie's rise and celebrating her second cookbook, version 2 of the True North Cabin cookbook that is just out now. Stephanie is with us on DeRusha Eats. We have known each other for almost 20 years, Stephanie.
I think so. When I first saw you somewhere and I was, you know, at the time, TV people are a big deal.
Typical sort of Midwest vibe, like we are the celebrities. And at that time, I was pretty low on the totem pole. I was a fairly new child TV reporter.
You were a big deal. So was Frank Vassalero and Julie Nelson and Melinda.
But you would be, I would run into you often at openings, restaurant openings, events. And it was always like, how do we describe, at the time you were a co-host of a show called Weekly Dish,
yep,
a Saturday food restaurant focused show. But it always was like, who's this woman who owns like this direct mail / printing company?
Yeah.
What is her story? But there's a magnetism about you that I was drawn to, and I think it helps explain why today you're having this not overnight success.
Yeah, 20 years worth of building it.
People are drawn to you.
Yeah, maybe. I hope.
Well,
you started
in sales, always have. People have always been drawn to you.
I was a salesperson that was on the other side of the page, the dial, the commercial, whatever it was. I've been in direct mail, radio, television, newspaper. I've been in all of it. And I always really loved the stories of the small businesses, the businesses, how they marketed their business, how they got customers in the door, how they got excitement built around their business. And I always loved food, and I knew that the food space was growing, so I asked Hubbard Broadcasting if I could have a show about food, and they said yes, and 18 years later, we're still doing it. Stephanie March is my radio partner. She's a food editor at Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine, and she was always the expert, right? Like, she was the food editor. She had worked in the restaurant business. She knew a lot about the food space. I was a cocktail waitress. I was a regular waitress during high school. But I never was a trained chef. I didn't have any schooling about food. I was not a writer. So I was always just in this weird space of who is this lady and why is she here? And yet I would show up and I would try to help promote people's businesses. The radio show was a big part of that. But I was trying to find my footing, and Stephanie was the expert. And what I came to was I was the eater.
Yeah.
And the eater has a place. When you walk into a restaurant, what does it feel like? What does it taste like? How are you greeted? You know, that was kind of a space that I felt like I could uniquely speak to because I knew about food, but I wasn't necessarily a professional in that space. So it was a different lane.
Yeah. And part of why I'm drawn to you and your story is that I feel my path has been similar in that my expertise, and also the challenge in trying to figure out what is the lane in food media, because I'm not a chef. I'm not that.
Yep.
I'm not a full-time food journalist. And so what am I? It's the same as you. We're both eaters. We love it.
I think, too, we're in a time where more non-professional people can have influence, right?
Sure.
what I really wanted to do was help tell the stories.
Yeah.
So maybe underneath all of it, I'm a storyteller that gets really geeked out still about your hot sauce.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you talk about building
your
brand.
Do we need any more hot sauces? I feel like if
we might be at a hot sauce apex.
We could take one food. If any of you listening, if your neighbors tell you that your hot sauce is so good that you should sell it, take a little bit of hot sauce and just like put it in their eyeball. You know,
except,
just do not do it.
Except, like, I judged a hot sauce competition recently.
Did you?
And there were like 70 hot sauces. And I was so stunned at how many there were and really how different they were from, you know, kettle cooked or fermented.
They
and
are
like,
but the grocery store doesn't need a whole aisle of hot sauce, does it?
Like, no,
there's
probably
so much
not.
Hot sauce. I'm like, could I have two different types of spaghetti noodles? Give me some more noodles and some fewer hot sauce.
We're getting
sauce.
More noodles, too, because now we're getting the Italian dried noodles that are supposedly better for your digestion. Have you seen those?
Yes.
They're always in, like, the brown wrapper.
Right? I know. It is good stuff. Stephanie Hansen is with us. Her book is out now, True North Cabin Cookbook. I want to take our listeners back to the time when you sort of had to map out a future because you had an inflection point in life and in your career that sort of led you to where you are today.
Yeah, I was working in radio and I had the food show. My husband and I sold a printing and direct mail company. And he was 10 years older, so he was like, this is amazing. I'm retired.
Yes.
It's awesome.
I have a pile of money.
And I'm crying in the corner like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to be. What am I going to do? And I would go to our company we sold, and we retained the building. So I would go to the building. It's where Prize Brewing is now. And I would sit with no furniture and like set up my laptop, and I would go to work every day after everything was gone, all
that,
the equipment
was
gone.
That was kind of the deal, right? You could still like be a consultant or something, or what?
We hadn't sold the building yet.
Oh, so you're
so
just
we retained
officing
the building.
It or something.
So I was like officing in an empty space just because I didn't know what to do with myself. I didn't know where to go. And I had started a website called stephaniesdish.com. And the reason I started it was because the radio station didn't have a great infrastructure for linking to recipes. Mm. And we were talking about food all the time. And then people would be like, can you tell me where the recipe was? And the show page wasn't a good place for
it.
So I was like, I'll just start this website. It'll be easy. I can put the links there. And so that was sort of how it started. But after you
radio
know,
station websites still have the same challenges.
Yes.
This was like
changed.
15 years ago. And we're still like, you know what?
How do you link to this?
Go to jasondarussia.com if you
want
to find the
if
link.
Because
this place
link.
Ain't doing it though.
So in July of that year, we sold the business in December. I was on our pontoon with my husband and I was crying because I was trying to figure out what I was. And he was like, why? What do you want to do? Like, stop with this moaning and groaning and just decide. And so I got my phone out and I started typing. And I know it was July 9th, 2016, because I just went back and looked at it. And there's tons of spelling errors. But what I said was that I wanted to have influence but be kind of famous. Like, not like Brad Pitt famous, but like Midwest famous, so that if you came to me and you were like, hey, where's the best place to have fried chicken, that I could tell you with authority that my favorite place is Bull's Horn because they've got the dill pickle brine fried chicken, and that you would get super jazzed and I could help you discover something new. And then he was like, okay, this is good. This is good. How are you going to get there? And I was like, I don't know, like podcasts, maybe a television show, maybe the radio show will continue. Maybe I'll do something else, but like, I can't, I'm not a writer. And he's like, why aren't you a writer? What do you can write? Like, what are you going to write? I was like, I don't know. I probably need a cookbook to get taken seriously. And he was like, okay, you're going to write a cookbook. So we like wrote all this stuff down. And I'm always big about goal setting. It drives my family crazy. Every year, first of the year, I make everyone write down 1 month, 3 month, 6 month, a year, 5 and 10 year goals. And we've kept them all this time. I write them down. And it is fascinating how literally if you write something down, your brain is working subconsciously to fulfill it. And that's...
Do you really think that's something different?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. I think the power of intention in your own brain helps you to fulfill something. And it might look different than what you thought, but when you look back, I mean, it's just crazy how often we get there.
Yeah.
So that was it. So then I just started working towards that. I built out my website. I pitched a book. I started writing the recipes. I started photographing the book. I would tell my radio partner, Stephanie, I was doing all this stuff. And I was still no more important in the space, but I just kept going. And finally, Jason Matheson was like, hey, do you want to do some food stuff on my show? I was like, sure. What do you want me to do? He's like, I want you to cook. You're funny. Let's cook some stuff. So we started cooking and it was well received. And then they said, well, let's do a 12-minute YouTube show. And then it was like, let's do 15 minutes. Now let's do a whole half hour show that will air on Saturday mornings.
That now show is called Taste Buds.
Taste Buds with Stephanie. Stephanie.
And Jason Matheson is the host of The Jason Show, which is now all over the country. But Jason has been plugging away in Twin Cities media for two decades and in sort of the entertainment slash host space.
Yep.
And he's a radio host too.
And he decided that he told the head of Fox, like, she should have a TV show.
Yeah.
Because she's funny.
How important was that to have someone go to bat for you like that?
Oh, I thank him every day.
Don't thank him every day.
I do. Because not only did he like bring up the idea, but he helped, he shined the light on what he saw was talent.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I had been trying to be seen in this space for a real long time. I pitched a million shows to people. I kept saying all the things I could do at the entities I was at. I just couldn't get seen by these people for whatever reason. And he saw me and he helped me get seen. And I'll never underestimate what his influence had on me.
So cool.
Yeah. And I have done that for people in my own career.
It's the greatest thing you can do.
And I
for
can't wait to do
else.
More of it. Yes. That's why I'm so jazzed about the TV show.
Funny? It's the most fulfilling thing that I've done in my whole career is like I can name like the people that I've sort of helped out.
Yeah.
Because who cares? Like, my stuff, fine. Like, I'm good. But, like, when you can shine the light on someone else, ah.
Well, and I was a sales manager for many years. So, being a mentor and a tutor there, and then seeing these people become heads of companies.
So cool, right?
It really is.
That's good.
And I have fired a lot of people, too.
That's fun, too. No,
it's horrible. That's the worst. Like, I've had a few people that I fired be like, if you wouldn't have fired me, I would have never found my thing.
Huh.
So,
wow.
In retrospect, thank you for taking that risk. I have some people that I fired that I'm still really good friends with that we laugh about it.
How about that?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. But, you know, I always feel like you're helping them find their next best thing.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people are just in the wrong jobs. And it's my fault because I hired you in the wrong job. Now, I'm going to give you an opportunity, but at some point, if we have to cut the cord, we got to cut the cord.
Why do you think it took so long? And now we mentioned Stephanie Hansen, who is here, is the co-host of The Weekly Dish. She has her TV show now all over the country, Taste Buds with Stephanie, which graduated from YouTube to Weekly to now nationally syndicated. On
85 markets.
Amazing.
Which is a lot.
Like it's a lot.
Detroit, Pittsburgh, Chicago,
big cities,
Austin, Texas. Like,
it's cool.
I love the idea that there's someone in Austin that's hearing the story of Vanessa's cheesecake funk and how she made her cheesecakes, or the Food Dolls and their story about their Egyptian heritage, and that somehow I get to be the person that's shepherding that story is just, it's a kick.
Why do you think you know, and I guess the broadcast and communications business is littered with stories of people who were rejected along the way. But do you think, what do you think it was that they missed? Was it age? Was it you weren't in the particular crowd? Like, you weren't a chef?
I think it was that. I think I didn't have a lane.
Yeah.
And I think COVID changed a lot. Because during COVID, it wasn't all about restaurant culture anymore. It was about eating. It was about rice and beans and what you're making in your pantry and how you can make a yeasty bread with cottage cheese when there was no yeast. It became about the food chain and what we had and what we didn't have and how you were going to make do. We sort of went back to the home arts, using things in mason jars and fermenting your own apple cider. And that was stuff I was really interested in doing all along. I was a gardener. And so I was like, oh, like, I can tell people what to do during this time and how to make inexpensive meals. And when you go to the grocery store and you're panicking that you're going to somehow get sick and you're just throwing like 62 things into a cart that make no sense because you're shopping in an absolute panic. And then you get all that home and I can help you.
Yeah.
Do you remember doing that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you were just, if you were
we cooked so much. We were like teaching our kids, hoping like, all right, well, I have two sons. Like, I didn't want them to be useless out in the real world.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, let's learn how to make eggs. Let's learn
how to... Like, the top 10 things you got to learn how to make. How can you roast a chicken? Can you make an omelet? Can you...
Because no one had anywhere to go.
No. And also...
Which was weird.
But beautiful.
Yep.
Like...
I feel that way.
I'm sad that we had COVID. I'm really sad if people lost family members. But, like, that time... I almost wish I could have enjoyed it more in the moment because we were spending time with our families. We were cooking. Life was slower.
It was slower.
And it was nice. And there wasn't so much outside distraction.
How do we recapture that today? I think your cookbooks tap into that idea. It's the True North Cabin Cookbook, Volume 1. Focused on the spring and summer, kind of the way you organize. Well, tell everybody how
it's organized by month. So the first one was May through September because we have an island cabin in northern Minnesota in Ely. And I cook like from Memorial Day to Labor Day a lot. So it was all of those recipes. Yes.
Yeah.
Our daughter could not be in summer sports. She had to be a cabin person. So we would leave in her pajamas at 3 o'clock on a Friday. We would stop and eat at Gordy's Hi Hat in Cloquet, and then we would get to the cabin, cross the lake in a boat, put her to bed. But the idea was we always wanted to wake up Saturday morning at our place. And we did that literally her entire school career. As she got older, we said, you can bring as many friends as you want, but we are still going, and you are still going. That's our family thing that we do. And thank goodness she liked it.
Yeah, yeah.
But we'd get there and we'd cook.
Right.
Like we'd make homemade cinnamon rolls, and we would make... rhubarb custard pie. We would make things that are, we were with our grandma a lot, my husband's mother. We were with friends and family. And then the second book, they wanted that same ethos to come through. And I was like, well, a lot of times I'm in the Twin Cities in the fall. And they're like, but it's cozy, right? You make a lot of cozy comfort food. You're making food for families on weekends and tasty, delicious meals. That hasn't changed.
Right. And so this book also organized by month. So you kind of get the vibe of the season, which I like. I think, you know, obviously we cook with seasonal ingredients that are available. But like, I don't know, sometimes I think we could dial that down, right? Like the way I grew up, my mom wasn't like going to the farmer's market to find the seasonal stuff. You're going to the grocery store to get whatever you could get. And you can pretty much get anything at the grocery store at any time now.
Yeah.
But you cook differently based on them. If it's cold, I want...
soup.
Yes. I don't know. Soup. I mean, it doesn't make a ton of sense, but like that is sort of how we mark time.
I think too, like I had a lot of pumpkin recipes. I'm obsessed with pumpkin. I love pumpkin. And my editor was
ahead of the trend.
You have 8 pumpkin recipes. I was like, it's fine. Everybody loves pumpkin.
Yeah.
Pumpkin pasta, pumpkin soup, pumpkin curry, pumpkin muffins, pumpkin chocolate chip cake. Pumpkin pancakes,
and you
pumpkin
feel like a superhero martini. When you do, like, there's something about the size of a pumpkin and the way you've got to, like, get that, the kind of gooey stuff out of there. Like, it, I don't know, it makes you feel like a cooking superhero when you use an actual pumpkin.
There's a recipe in the book that is a dip that you make in the pumpkin.
Ah,
and cool. When you reach in to, like, get it, you get a little bit of the sidewall of the pumpkin and a little bit of the cream and the cheese. It's very showy and very fun.
It is fun.
I always think about, too, like cooking with kids. And I only had one, but I know people have kids. And I think a big, like if you're a grandparent or you're a parent, inviting your kids to cook in the kitchen with you, like you're teaching these life skills that they're going to use forever.
Maybe that's the next book.
Oh, I don't know. It's like having a child. You have 9 months to birth it, and then you need a year of getting away from it in order to think about what's next.
It's a lot of work, right? I mean, obviously refining the recipes, figuring out how to tell those stories in a way that people are going to do it right.
Yeah, because you have to write it so that the description matches what the food's going to look like at each step of the process. And then you take the picture and you want that picture to look tasty and delicious. You have to stage everything. I had to go to Goodwill's all over and buy like different dishes, different napkins, different things for staging. And then like there's a story with each recipe, right? I feel like cookbooks need to have a sense of place and a story. That's what is important to me when I read a cookbook. So there's narrative with all of it. Like October starts with what? The 1991 Halloween snowstorm, because everyone in Minnesota has the story about the blizzard, right?
Right. It has to.
Yes.
It has to.
So each of those stories kind of start off the chapter, and I'm proud of the books. They're fun, and I think they're very accessible.
Mom, I'd like to propose a dinner optimization plan for 2026. Soccer practice every week. Get back late and you're stressed out about making something fast but actually nutritious for dinner. When Ashley's mom picked me up, I noticed that she made Blue Apron. It came in like a little kit. By the time it was ready, I still had shin guards on. And it was real food, fresh veggies, protein, actual flavor. Take her from the younger generation. We're innovators. Keeping a couple Blue Apron meals around. Not the worst idea.
Get 50% off your first two orders plus free shipping with code LISTEN50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Hey, it's Jason DeRusha with a message from Minnesota's pig farmers. Discover the meat of the North, pork. Pork is as Minnesotan as the lakes, trees, and people who call this state home. Did you know there are more than 30,000 pig farming families? They live and work in the North Star State, raising one of the safest, most delicious meats the whole world can enjoy. Pork is something we enjoy in the DeRusha family at least a few times a week. Maybe it's pork loin roast, shoulder, pork chops, ribs, bacon. Oh, I'm getting hungry just talking about it. It's so affordable, too. If you're looking for recipes, MNPork.com's got them. Great recipes like dilled pork cutlets, Parmesan-crusted pork chops, and you can feel good about eating pork from Minnesota farmers. They've been reducing their carbon footprint with better genetics, new technologies, and more. Pick up pork tonight for dinner at your local meat market or grocery store. Let's have Minnesota pork for dinner. Oh, yeah.
DeRusha Eats continues. Here's your host, Jason DeRusha.
Do you think, you know, do people think that because you have two books out now, a TV show, a radio podcast and a radio show, that you must be filthy rich from
they
all this
do,
stuff?
They do, but yeah. They're so wrong. I've never made less money in my whole life because everybody that like...
Isn't the book a moneymaker?
No.
Really?
Well, not when you think about that food costs have increased like 30%. You... are having to buy all the food, buy all the stuff.
Everything you're testing.
And you do it more than once.
You fail, of course.
Yep.
And then you have to photograph the food.
And like, I can't eat all that food.
You have to pay
for all that. Yes, you pay for everything.
The photographer you pay for?
I did it myself because I didn't have the money.
Wow.
If you hire, I got the first book I got bid and it was $18,000 to photograph it. And that person I knew was very good and very reasonable.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I can't do that. So I called the editor and I was like, are you okay if it kind of looks like my Instagram with my phone? Because that's what I got going here. And she was like, sure. So yeah, and now more people know these things, I guess, going into it. I was a dope. I didn't know anything.
I don't know. I think most people think like once you get a book deal, like, they're flying you around to do publicity?
No, you do your own publicity tour. They might help you, and my people have been pretty helpful.
Yeah.
But you get less than a dollar a book. Your first print run, a good print run for a regional book is 5,000. If you get to like 10 or 15,000, but so that means like literally you're probably going to make $15,000 on a book. Well, for a year of your life, and for all the food cost, it's like you're almost paying them to do it.
I'm out. Yeah. I was interested in writing a book and now I'm out.
Like yeah. And so
why do it?
For me, I needed the agency. Mm-hmm. I needed for people to be able to look at me and think I knew something about what I was talking about. And that was important to me. So why did I do the second book? Because I had a lull moment. A quiet moment where I'm all about the hunt of the chase. I'm a salesperson, right? So I was like, oh, a second book. Okay, maybe. Well, what if they did? What if I asked them to do this? And what if I asked them to do that? And then like they did all the stuff I asked. And then it still, I got to the end of the day and I signed the contract. I was like, oh, now I got to write the book. But it was a little easier the second time.
It's so cool. I also think for someone like you who is interested in being helpful and like, both of us, I think, share, yes, we want to be helpful. And part of being, I'm sort of intrigued in your thinking as to why you wanted to be like kind of famous, Midwest famous.
Yeah.
Because like people could look at that and be like, well, that's just, it's just ego. You're just being.
It's hubris.
It's hubris.
Yeah.
But I don't get that vibe from you. So why?
Because I feel like I get a lot of joy out of helping people discover new things. It's all about the discovery. And I like, if like, have you ever done the StrengthsFinders test?
Yeah.
And it will not surprise you that woo is my number one strength. So I have the ability to bring people together, to make people feel good, and I get a lot of energy from that. Well, there's nothing better to do that than at a communal table. And I really believe that food is like kind of what we're missing in some respects, like this idea that we break bread together, that as a family we eat together, or that we invite our neighbors into our home to learn about them or their culture or what they eat. I just feel like we're sort of siloed all over the place in these individual, like we're staring at our phones. And when you actually get with people, and even people that aren't like you or people that you think you have nothing in common with, you're still going to cook food. And that is a connection. And I love that I get to be the conduit to help people make those connections. It really jazzes me still today.
Stephanie Hansen is with us. The True North Cabin Cookbook Volume 2 is out right now. And you can check out her show Taste Buds with Stephanie and her podcast, A Weekly Dish. When you look at being from the Midwest and writing from the perspective of the cabin, I wonder how you react to being described as like, oh, well, you know, you're... People like you because you've got this Midwestern mom/grandma vibe going
right.
on.
Right. Oh,
because you and I are both, we're not as young as we were.
No, but I will.
We compete against like the 24-year-old Instagram beauties. As
and I get
like.
Kind of, there's been some really amazing cookbooks that have come out of really influential, you know, Connecticut. They started out working as Ina Garten's assistant.
Yes.
And I'm so jealous.
I know, right?
Yeah, I am the same age as Julia Child was when she did her first television show. And she was an inspiration for me. I've read a lot about her. Her story reminds me of mine. She did eventually go to cooking school and she was brilliant. And she became a trained chef. But she always had this very likable appeal about her. And, you know, when she dropped something, she would just have the 3-second rule. And she was kind of funny in that way. I did not expect that I'd be like the Lucille Ball of cooking, which is probably where I'm coming in at. I wanted to be a little more Julia, a little less Lucille Ball, but you got to start with your strengths, right?
That's really funny.
Yeah, I am like if there's a conveyor belt and there's chocolate on it or there's tomatoes to be smashed, the producers on my show, and my show has 2 people that do it. So there's 3 of us.
Yeah.
Which is unheard of. Like
so small.
If you, a normal TV show would have 20 people.
But
so,
you do it all on location and it's
in my
all,
house. Yeah. And like literally my dog is running through the shots. My husband's trying to run to the bathroom and have you not see him. It's just really homemade like that. But the people that work on my show, Michelle and Brandon, are really good at it. They get me. They get the vibe. We always talk about like, what's the heart of the show? What are we going for? And we try to make it feel real. Like the first part is we go and we discover something or we learn something. And the second part is we bring it back into my kitchen and show you that you can take this learning and make something at home. So like pasta making, right? I literally didn't even really realize that people were making pasta other than with a Cuisinart and the pasta making attachment.
Right.
But turns out, yes, like the grandmas in Italy, they were just rolling it out.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, well, that's how we're going to do
Let's
it.
Let's try
then.
It.
Yeah. Right. And it was super good. Learning from Sean Sherman about like what is real Thanksgiving? What were the foods that Native American people were literally eating? And how did that get to the way that we're eating Thanksgiving today? So we did some sides that were full of Native ingredients and only Native ingredients. But then I was like, but we got to have mac and cheese too.
Yeah.
You know, because that's become the staple, I think, of the American Thanksgiving. Everyone has mac and cheese on the Thanksgiving table, don't you think?
I think so. Isn't that funny? Like with like breadcrumbs and you bake it.
Yep.
So it feels like a casserole.
It's the same recipe basically that's on the back of the Cream-It box or there's one that Joy of Cooking too that has dried mustard. And, you know, I am humble and I do make myself sound like a dope, but I do know a little bit about food. I mean, I've been in the space a long time. I've met with a lot of people that make food, the purveyors. I know a lot about animal husbandry, foraging. So, you know, along the way, I've picked up a lot of information from a lot of cool people.
But when your perspective is that of the eater, like that's what's different. That's all. Like you, as I've always said, like I apply a journalist approach in terms of curiosity and asking questions, but the enthusiasm of an eater who just loves it.
Yeah,
and
same.
I think you have that same sort of vibe.
And that's how I
and
want.
And now, 20 years later, you know stuff. Like, you don't have to be like, oh, I don't know stuff. Like, you know stuff.
But I know think enough stuff to be dangerous.
People relate to the fact that, like, you're not trying to be a know-it-all.
No. And I'm also, like, I guess part of it, too, is I do still want you to like me, which I wish I didn't. That's, no. like, my think my Achilles heel. But in that, I also want to like you. Like, I love to communicate and connect with you as a person. Yeah. I love to know what drives you. I love to know what makes you tick. It's like going back all those days to being a salesperson and trying to figure out what motivates you, how to get the best out of you. When I'm doing a shoot with someone, I want them to feel super comfortable mm-hmm. and not like they're, you know, I feel like we're doing it together. Does that
yeah.
make sense?
Yeah.
And I've really only had...
Is it exhausting to want to be liked all the time?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's sort of sad, too, because people say mean things. The other day I woke up, and it was 6:30 a.m., and my first email that I got was from this woman who was like, you need a neck lift, and I hate your laugh. And I was like, okay, well, way to get personal right out of the gate, like things I can do nothing about. But I think people sometimes are just so sad yeah. and so lonely,
yeah,
and they're so angry at the world or what's not been given to them or... And I'm not going to show up like that. I'm like, I'm sorry that you feel that way. Thanks for watching.
Yeah.
Boom.
Right.
You know, the sometimes internet is commoditized.
Sometimes the people can get you, right? Like sometimes people get
oh,
to
people
me.
Are mean.
Yeah. I'm pretty thick skinned. It doesn't really bother. And I want to be liked too. Most broadcasters want to be liked.
That's probably why we're in the business.
Yeah, of course.
I'm better. And I probably shouldn't tell all of you that it like. Crushes me because then you're just going to do it more. But I am better. And I'm also learning how to just be myself.
Yeah.
And so if you don't like me, I'm just being myself. And so that just means like that you don't like me. And it's not,
yeah,
I don't have
okay.
to take that personally.
Right.
My friend Dan Beatty once said, we were salespeople at KS95 and we worked in like a pit. And he goes, you know, Stephanie, you're not for everyone, and that's okay. And I've never forgotten that because
like
it's
that.
So true.
Right. We don't all have to be for everyone. It's
no.
Okay. Yeah, it's all right.
And the world is full of diverse people, so that's what makes it go
Stephanie Hansen is with us. I want you to pick up the book. It's called A True North Cookbook. She gets $1, so.
Yep, about.
Go
get the
Steph
book.
Give Steph a buck.
If you order it on Amazon, it's probably less than that, but hey, they'll ship it for free.
Let me, before you go, ask you a couple questions about the food scene and about dining out.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite, like, go-to special occasion restaurant with your husband?
Yeah. First would probably be Pia Steak. My husband lived there.
Oh,
his
I've always
junior
wanted to live in
and
that
senior
building.
Year,
oh, cool.
He lived right above the restaurant, above the what they call the porte cochere, and the doorman would like give him a boost up with the foot so he could climb up and into his window when he got home late at night.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's like the only co-op building in Minneapolis.
And he worked there with Lucia from Lucia's.
Wow.
Who
fun.
And so, yeah. So PS Steak is always kind of a home base for us. But, you know, I love Meritage. I think Muriel is one of the most underrated restaurants in the Twin Cities. I'm glad she's finally getting her due. I really like in my neighborhood, Lat 14, Anna Med's restaurant.
Yeah, wonderful. To have that in the suburbs is crazy, right?
Yeah, and I still, like, I think V&I has the best pork chop in town.
Yes.
I love, like, the fried chicken. I talk about Bull's Horn. I love the, Patisserie 46.
We have
John
some world,
Krause.
Like he's literally world class.
We have so many of those people here.
Yes.
And that's like I get so excited thinking about future shows because we've made 40 episodes and we have 40 more planned at least. So kind of I'm locked in for 40
sure.
more. So I'm like, okay,
cool.
If I only have 40 more episodes, what are the stories that I feel like we need to still tell?
It's fun.
Yeah, it's been a blast.
What'd you have for breakfast?
I don't eat breakfast, Jason. And that is because... Like a woman of my age, you can eat about 1,200 calories a day.
Right.
So I save it for dinner. I'm a big dinner eater. I want savory, dinnery foods. And I want to go out to eat a lot. And my husband can only eat like cheeseburgers, basically. Yeah. He's developed all kinds of allergies.
Last time I saw you guys, he was eating a cheeseburger.
Yeah. So if you see us, like, or if you wonder why I'm
at a pizza restaurant.
Yeah. If you wonder why I'm not with my husband a lot eating, it's because of that. Because, right. And also that's been good for the home cooking life, though, because he can't go out as much, I do cook a lot at home and I eat out with friends.
One piece of advice for people listening that you think might make our world a better place?
Oh, my normal piece of advice is fake it till you make it, but I don't know.
Good, yeah.
It's a good piece of advice, but I don't know if that makes the world a better place. Probably In some respects, it probably could make it worse.
Yeah.
There was just a quote that someone's mother said that I wrote down before I came here. I literally heard it this morning. It was about something about when you disagree with someone, build a longer table, not a higher fence.
Mm, I like that. Well, it goes to what really I think you're all about, which is encouraging people to spend time together, eat together, and cook together.
And listen and like exchange ideas. Yeah. And I really believe that Minneapolis and St. Paul and the Twin Cities are an amazing place to raise children, to live, to work. I am a huge fan of the outstate areas too, like Ely, Minnesota is my second home. And I can stand at the Ely Parade of 6,000 people in that town. And next to me is someone who's wearing a pro-mining shirt and who's got his ball cap on. And he's screaming in my ear, you know, about mining when the Friends of the Boundary Waters come by. But then we can be sitting at the same bar 10 minutes later and shooting the proverbial shit, as it were.
Yeah.
That dichotomy and being able to exist in that is how we're going to get out of this sort of polarizing mess we're in.
Really enjoyed this. I always enjoy talking
to
you.
Oh, me too. It's been great.
This was terrific.
Everybody loves talking about themselves. Maybe you and I more than others.
No doubt. I mean, yes, I'm going to go do it for 3 hours now on my afternoon radio show.
I'm a big fan of talk radio, though, and it's been fun to see you make the transition from TV to talk radio because it's not as easy as you think, people.
No. I've been doing it 3 years, and I feel like maybe I'm getting it. Finally.
You're doing
like
great.
It took a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to frame up conversations, and you have to. It's really more challenging than people think.
Yeah. This was terrific. Stephanie Hansen, go pick up the cookbook. Check out the radio show or the TV show, especially if it's playing in your market. But you can find it online as well. Taste Buds with Stephanie. Thanks, Stephanie.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to the DeRussia Eats podcast. On WCCO Radio, 830 AM, we do conversations with chefs, with farmers, with small business people every Tuesday and Thursday at 4 p.m. The podcast is available every week. If you enjoyed what you heard, I would love for you to leave us a review. Give us however many stars you can. I don't know, 10, 20 stars would be nice, 5 stars, and leave your feedback as well. It really helps us grow and helps support covering the food community here at WCCO Radio and in the DeRussia Eats podcast. If you'd like to email me with an idea or a question about the restaurant scene, you can email Jason at Odyssey, AUDACY.com. Jason at Odyssey.com. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time on the DeRussia Eats podcast.
Thanks for listening to DeRussia Eats. Dan Cook is our producer. Jason DeRussia is your host. Please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave us a review. DeRussia Eats is a production of Odyssey.